Here we are again, Murph, almost a month into the hockey season, and we have upon us yet another Great American Hockey Show podcast.
I love it. I love it. And now it really feels like hockey now, Joe. I mean, we're in the full swing of things, especially with the Bruins. They've had such an up-and-down season already. It definitely feels like mid-season, so it's going to be interesting to see how this second month goes. I mean, we both agreed that they could be very much out of it by American Thanksgiving, and that still could be the case, so we will see.
And because it pisses off so many sensitive hockey fans, Murph, let's get into some trade rumors when we start this show up. What do you think?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, do it. Let's do it, buddy. Great American Hockey Show, here we come. And welcome back to the Great American Hockey Show podcast. I'm your host, Joe Haggerty, Bruins insider for Comcast Sportsnet New England. And my co-host is Jimmy Murphy, who, Murph, tell everybody about what you're doing right now and what you're involved in, which sites and organizations you're covering the Bruins for.
Yikes. A little bit of everything right now. But I'm writing for BruinsDaily.com. Of course, I do this podcast with you right now. And I also work for a company called Live Barn. We put, cameras the size of an iPhone that follow an algorithm in to live stream amateur hockey and amateur hockey rinks across North America. And I am doing some radio work with Boston Herald Radio.
Very nice. A man, a Renaissance man with his painting brushes in many different cans, coloring all over the city, but it's all good hockey talk with Jimmy Murphy. And Murph, you know, we look at the Bruins right now, and it's an interesting situation. They've righted the ship a little bit. Mm-hmm. The new faces and the young guys look like they're starting to get a little bit more comfortable, both with the system and with the guys that they're playing with. And, you know, there's not a lot of hesitation to the game anymore. I think they've also certainly been helped out by the schedule makers. That West Coast trip to Colorado and Arizona is exactly what they needed when they went out there, and they put the beat down on those two weak sisters in the Western Conference. And then coming back home after a really good – their best win of the season, I think, against the New York Islanders, they came home to play an Arizona team that had played 5 games in 8 days, was on the second night of back-to-backs, and, you know, basically had no legs the second half of the game, and they just pounded the stuffing out of them. So the Bruins have righted the ship, and they're certainly playing better, but I think they've also gotten some help there, and the real test is up ahead with some of the teams that they're playing as to where this team is at right now.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and one thing I'll disagree with you on there, Joe, is that, well, I agree with you that, you know, they caught Arizona at the right time. Mm-hmm. They're obviously coming off a back-to-back there in Toronto, but I think Arizona's a little better than you're giving credit.
Well, they're better, but they're still not a playoff team,
well,
I don't think.
They're in first place as we speak.
We'll see. Right now they are.
I mean, if Anaheim, I don't see Anaheim getting better for a bit.
You don't think so?
I don't.
I see them making a coaching change at some point soon and getting better
a complete turnaround?
As a result of that. They're too talented to not turn it around. I just Arizona's got some young talent. Obviously, Duclair and Domi are really good players.
I really
like Oliver Ekman and Larson. The coach is good. They've got some other players that are coming out of
the woodwork. They could push for a spot. You never know.
They could, but it's a very L.A. is actually the one that has come to the top now.
Yeah.
Is in first place and is there. What were they, won 6 in a row?
Yeah,
so,
they have been,
you know,
on fire.
Arizona's up towards the top, and they're playing
well.
But they've
got so much competition.
But I just don't think the defenseman-wise or depth-wise.
But give the Bruins credit. I don't think they beat a sucky team.
Yeah.
I think they beat a good team, caught them at the right time, and I think they beat a good team when they didn't, you know, when they caught them even-handed there in Arizona. But the Bruins are sort of like you said. They're not as hesitant right now. They're going to still make tons of mistakes, as any young team would and any experienced team would. But at the same time, they look a little more comfortable out there. I spoke with Zdeno Chara earlier, and he said, look, you know, these guys, these younger guys on the team right now, they're starting to just feel their own out there. They're starting to really just be themselves, whereas before maybe they were trying to be something they weren't. Mm-hmm. And you and I have spoken about that, where a lot of times because of injuries or because of inexperience, you know, a number 5 or a number 6 guy is going to be a number 1 guy, you know, especially when Chara was out. And so it screws up the rotation of things. And I think now things are falling into a little more place. I'm not necessarily saying they have their correct order there. Like, I don't think their number 3 is really a number 3 or the number 4 is really a number 4.
Well, you know what?
But
they're
a little more comfortable.
I agree. And they're a little more slotted into where they should go, a little more.
Yeah.
Even more so when Dennis Seidenberg comes back. But I will say this. I had doubts about Torrey Krug and his ability to be a top four guy and to play big minutes and to potentially be a three, four defenseman, play against other teams' best players, kill penalties, do all the things that he has to do at 5'9", 190 pounds. Mm. But he's been fantastic, I think, throughout the first month of the season. Obviously, power play-wise, he's been great, but I think he's not been a liability 5-on-5. I think D-zone-wise, he's more than held his own. He's been one of the best defensemen that they've had, and I think he's shown early in the going here that he is a top four defenseman and that he is being slotted properly. I'm not sure that Adam McQuaid is a top four defenseman, and I continue to see him struggle just to get the puck out of the zone and get hemmed in a lot, which is tough if you're going to play that many minutes against good offensive players. But you're definitely right that things are starting to settle down. What I see is there's no hesitation in their game anymore. They're starting to win puck battles because they know where they're supposed to be on the ice. They know where their teammates are going to be on the ice.
Forwards are coming
they
back,
know,
too.
Yeah, and they know where they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Like, all of that stuff is starting to happen because I think everything, the system and, you know, the guys they're playing with is all starting to sink in. But, you know, at the end of the day right now, they're 4-3-1. They're just out of a playoff spot. They're going down to Florida to play two teams that are ahead of them in the division. I think this weekend is a big test to see where they're at against two very good teams.
Because the test they've had, they failed, right, but those first three of the season.
Absolutely.
So here's the next test.
Yeah, and they passed the second one where they went to the island and they beat a very good team that's a playoff-caliber team that's a top team in the East. And, like, you know, that was the best win of the season. They limited them to 8 shots in the final 40 minutes.
That was old-school Claude Julien.
It was. It was very impressive.
Clamping it down.
No doubt. And so now let's spin it forward a little bit here. Let's hypothetically say this team is currently what they've shown to be in this little turnaround, that they stay right about where they are. Maybe ninth spot, maybe in the eighth spot.
Be, right?
Right. Exactly where they thought they would be, where they're clearly not as bad as the first.
Cue the Jim Mora.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, not you. It was George, Green, Dennis Green.
Dennis Green. We are who they thought they were. But, you know, let's say they're going to be right about where they are now. They're not as bad as they were the first three games, and they, you know, they're a little more like what we've seen lately. Trade market-wise, clearly they still need a defenseman, a top-four guy. Like I said before, I think Adam McQuaid is the one that you look at right now when Dennis Seidenberg comes back that really doesn't fit in there as a top-four defenseman. Colin Miller is still young. I'm not sure that you can put him in as a 20-minute-a-night guy. Same with Joe Morrow. Same with Zach Trotman. Kevin Miller is getting a little banged up and I think is not a top-pairing defenseman as he's been a lot with Zdeno Chara. So it's pretty clear that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and the Bruins need to go out and get a top four defenseman, a potential impact guy that's going to help push them over the top if this is where they currently stay around Thanksgiving in December. So, Murph, give me some names of that might intrigue and interest the people out there for available defensemen.
Well, I'm going to go, we had all the Back to the Future talk before, and I'm going to go back in
1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah, exactly. We had that recently. So I'm going to go back in time here, and I'm going to look at the Calgary Flames blue line right now.
Dougie Hamilton?
Joe, no. Yeah, Dougie wants to come right back.
Because that might turn Claude Julien into Doc Brown from Back to the Future if all
we
of a sudden
we do know that. if we want him back, it has to be a package deal with his brother.
Hey, do you buy that? Did you buy that?
I buy it. Yeah, I do. I don't buy a lot that Damian Cox says, but I buy that. I think that you and I have had these conversations both on and off the air. That Dougie, not necessarily all his fault, was a different breed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he grew up in a very athletic household that accepted nothing but excellence, was used to getting what they want. And, you know, we've heard stories about his parents
interfering. I think they're heavily involved in his career.
And I think that played a role.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not saying that Dougie's innocent. I'm not trying to get him off the hook. But I think there was a force there of outside influence coming in that sort of crafted the way Dougie looked at things. And, you know, hopefully for his sake, that clears up because he's never going to really fulfill his potential in the NHL if he's got other people close to him kind of trying to direct what he does.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was told from a team, not the Bruins, that was in the top 10 drafting that year when he was available, one of the teams that passed on him because he dropped. He was supposed to go a lot higher than he did. And a team that passed on him, even though they needed a defenseman, because they had reservations about just, you know, his interview and how he came off when they talked to him, and also just how invested and involved his family was in a lot of the hockey decisions that were being made. And you know, this is the way the NHL is now, especially with the World Junior kids and these kids that are super talented that can make the NHL when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, is not only are you drafting the player and his skill set at that teenage, that young, precocious teenage age, but you're also bringing that family into your fold and bringing them as an involved piece into the entire thing. Because at that age, the family's still going to be involved with a kid that young. And, you know, from everything that I gathered, that was definitely a factor in difficulty here in Boston, was his family getting involved in, you know, things they probably shouldn't have with the Bruins organization. What? And, you know, they're probably looking out for him. I'm sure they're doing the right thing and what they think is the right thing. They're both Olympians and athletes, and they probably think that they understand it on a different level than most parents. But I can tell you right now, having talked to NHL executives that have gotten phone calls from parents before, that is not what you want to do if you're an NHL parent, is get to interfere on that level, because all you're going to do is embarrass your son, and he's going to get called out in a team meeting and made to, you know, feel bad about it.
And, Joe, you wrote about this last year, that he was kind of the odd man out or the black sheep in the dressing room, and, you know, and that he sometimes wasn't involved with social events. I think that's a direct result of his upbringing. That's my take from the outside. I don't have any proof of this, but you know, you think about it, if it is as it seems that his parents were working him hard all the time and it was always about sports and you know, 24/7, breathe, eat, sleep, sports, then, you know, he probably didn't have much of a social life, I would imagine. And that showed. I mean, he definitely struggled sometimes talking to people. And a part of me feels bad for the kid. I really, like, it's hard to say you feel bad for a millionaire hockey player, but at the same time, I hope that stuff, he works it out, because like you said, his teammates are not going to take kindly to that. And, you know, we know how tight-knit a team is, and you don't want to be on the outside when you're in that dressing room. So, you know, not to sidetrack here, but let's get back to that Calgary blue line.
Yeah.
Dennis Wiedemann.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely going to be available.
Dennis Wiedemann is very available right now. Now, the question is, Joe, he does have another year after this year at $5.2 million against the cap. Not sure the Bruins really want to take that on. So if you look a little further down the Calgary blue line, Chris Russell is a guy I'm a huge fan of, and I think he'd really fit in as a Claude Julien type of guy. Mm-hmm. Blocks tons of shots. I mean, Don Cherry, I think, has orgasms about him every night. You know,
thanks for putting that image in my head. Yeah, I appreciate it.
That's what we're here for at the Great American Hockey Show.
I thought it was only like curtain stores where he bought his suit material that did that for him.
No.
But apparently it's more
than
that.
It is Chris Russell. And this is a guy that just will go to war for you. The type of gritty guy that I think the Bruins, they have that in Adam McQuaid, I know, but this guy can play more top 4 minutes than Adam McQuaid. And he's only got this year at 2.6, prorated by now, and he's a UFA next year. So,
but he's not off to a good start.
And he's
start,
young. Right? He's not off to a good start. Yeah, he's kind of like, hey, maybe needs a change of scenery right now. Calgary could use some forward help. You know, we're not going to mention any names here on the Bruins because we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. But
there's a reason you hear certain prominent
there's
names.
There's some matches here.
There are reasons you hear certain prominent names in the Bruins roster getting mentioned in trade rumors, no matter how much fans don't want to hear it, no matter how much the Bruins organization will deny it, because they have to deny it, because to admit that kind of thing would do way more harm than good. But those are the kind of players you have to trade if you want to get good players back in return. It's pretty obvious.
You can't trade a bag of pucks.
No, well, you can't trade Chris Kelly and the ghost of Jordan Caron for Chris Russell. That's not going to work. No, you can't do that. Oh, damn.
Even though it's Halloween.
Oh, that's too bad.
You know, it's interesting, Joe, too. I mean, and you know, I had a conversation with a Bruins player right before we recorded this, and. You know, he wasn't happy. He kind of got snippy with me at first when I brought up trade rumors. And he said, yeah, well, you reporters, you create. And he says, I don't believe it unless it comes from team management. So then, you know, I said, do you really think it's ever going to come from there?
Right. That's the last place
I mean, really,
hear it from.
Unless the trade is about to happen, that's the only time you're going to hear it from him, right?
Right.
And he kind of paused and he thought about it. And he says, all right, I see what you're saying. I said, look, you got to understand, Z, us as reporters, we don't wake up and say, I'm going to create a trade rumor today. It's a combination of things where you're hearing it from so many different people, and where there's smoke, there's fire. And you got to make that determination sometimes, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But we're not just doing this out of thin air. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have been in this business for a while. There's other reporters that have been in this business for a while that will put those out there. They're out there. And the names we hear aren't the names that the fans want to hear, because they think you can always just give up nothing and get the whole team, you know, get a superstar. You can't. You're going to... especially in hockey now, Joe, we're seeing more quote-unquote hockey trades, and that's what I think you're going
to
see here.
To be fair to those fans who don't understand, I think they were used to the previous regime, too, with Peter Chiarelli, where he didn't make a lot of moves and there wasn't a lot of shaking things up. And you got used to just, this is the roster that you have, these are the players that you have, and you overvalue them, and you don't move them. And I don't think it's going to be like that with Don Sweeney and Cam Neely in this team.
Yeah,
I think
if they have no choice, it can't be like that.
Yeah, if they don't like what they see, they're going to make moves. If they have to clear more cap space, they're going to make moves. If they see weaknesses on the team that need to be addressed, they're going to make moves. If they don't like a player and decide he's not a good fit, they will make moves. I think they're going to be much more active in the trade market on all fronts than Peter Chiarelli was when he was here. And there's both good and bad to that, obviously. You know, you might give up on a player too early, but you're also going to, you know, address the things that need to be addressed rather than just hope that they work themselves out. So, but I think there's a learning curve here where people need to get used to that, you know, Trader Don Sweeney is here, and he's not going to hesitate to make changes if he thinks
it needs to be made. This is a team in flux, Joe. Yeah. And we know that. This is a team in flux. Are they in a rebuild? That's yet to be determined, but this is a team in flux.
They're not in a full rebuild, but when you trade Milan Lucic and Dougie Hamilton and you get all future assets in exchange for those two, what does that tell you?
Exactly. What does that sound like? You could have got some roster players. Yeah. Who are we kidding here?
And you know what? I think for the betterment of the franchise, it was the right move.
At the time. Exactly.
But this tells you this is where the franchise is headed.
I have no problem with that, Joe. I get, you know, hey, we're a title town here. We're Boston. We got the Patriots. We got the Red Sox. You know, I get it. But you know what? That's how those teams got there.
Right.
Well, how long did the Patriots stink?
The Bruins, the Patriots, the problem is the people will look at the Patriots and they see Tom Brady and Belichick do it for an extended period, like 15 years, and think everybody can do that. No. That is the outlier, that a team can take those main
people don't realize how lucky we are to see that.
Yeah, and continue to compete for 15 years. It's much more cyclical than that, and what we're seeing right now is just the downslide of a great Bruins nucleus that won the Cup, went to the finals twice, and this is the inevitable downturn on the back end from when they were rising in, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010 towards getting to 2011. Mm-hmm. A couple more defenseman names that might be interesting. Eric Johnson's one, I think,
in Colorado,
that you could look at, because Colorado's not going anywhere. I think Patrick Roy is not a very good coach. I don't think they're going to compete
this year. I'm
glad
you're with me on that, Joe. And when is anyone ever going to call that guy out?
I think it's going to happen soon because Colorado's fallen into the dumpster again. And you look at that team, it's sloppy.
He gets such a free pass with the Canadian media. It's disgusting.
Players that should be playing much better are not, as far as the level of play that they're at. It looks uninspired. And they gave up in that game. The Bruins went out there and played when they went down 2-0. That is unforgivable as far as I'm concerned.
You know what I'm seeing? I don't know if we mentioned it on the show or if you and I were just kind of talking hockey off the air, Joe, but you know, we had obviously the recent coaching change in Columbus. And we both agreed when we were looking at John Tortorella going in there, we both said, this is the perfect fit for where they are right now.
Yeah.
But he's gone in two years.
And the players they have.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a guy that comes in and whips everybody into shape, gets them on track, and lays down the law and puts them in the right direction. But sooner or later, that message wears thin. I think that's what happened in Colorado. We saw him come in. We saw him grab these young kids by the horn and just say, listen, shape up. This is what you're going to do. This is how you went. And they did it for a year. But what have they done since then? Nothing. And at what point do people start to question him? It's very interesting out there, and I think you're right that it's a team you could look at for trades right now because I see them maybe in a bigger tailspin than Bruins.
And certainly in more of a tailspin than the Flames. Yeah. You know, the Flames may bear it out.
Flames just got too good too quick.
Yeah, I know they have a surplus of defensemen, so maybe they'd be looking to move somebody
Flames
because
will be
of
fine.
That. But I think you got to look more at teams like Columbus, at teams like maybe Philly if they continue to fall out, certainly Colorado. Eric Johnson is a former, you know, very high lottery pick, a talented player, a guy that plays 20-plus minutes a night, a guy that can do some things offensively. He's got good size, all that stuff. Has never really fully realized his potential, but I think that's the kind of guy you could look at and say, you know, maybe he's a good fit here.
St. Louis has got a surplus of D-men right now. Mm-hmm. They need forwards. I know they brought in, who was it, Havlat and Zubris on a PTO.
Yep.
I thought Zubris was gone. I didn't even know he was still around. Did you? Wasn't he in like Sega NHL 94 or something?
I think he might have been.
Like, wow.
Him and Ruslan Pinatenko.
Yeah, I mean, I get the whole Jager thing, but man, Zubris.
They
could use some forward help.
They could, and I'm sure, you know, they're looking at the veteran
and
tryout
sure
route.
Brad Marchand would fit in very nicely there.
Yeah, and they're looking the veteran tryout route, but when that doesn't work, they're going to be looking to trade for a forward, no doubt about it. But the question is, who's available in St. Louis? I mean, obviously, Shattenkirk is the one that you look at and you say, you know, they're probably not going to re-sign him. He's a very talented high-end offensive player. He's played here before in Boston when he was with BU. There's some past history there. They tried to trade for Shattenkirk when he was with Colorado.
Yeah, I think
they were really interested in him. The Bruins were back then.
I think it would be a great move for the Bruins. That would be a big mistake for the Blues, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's going to be made available. But the question is, who does St. Louis trade then?
Yeah.
You know, which of their defensemen do they give up, and who is going to be available to the Bruins? And who would fit their needs? And, you know, another one that has been tossed out there that maybe he could work out in Boston, and I know he's available, certainly, from Philly, is Luke Shen, who I think is super overrated. It was part of the Toronto Maple Leafs Hockey Night in Canada hype machine, World Junior Classic, World Junior Championships hype machine, where he had the name, you know, he looked like a good player, and everybody thought he was going to be the next greatest thing, but clearly he's just kind of an average defenseman, a good stay-at-home physical guy. But, you know, in the right system, playing with Zdeno Chara, playing with Claude Julien, who I think is the right system for that type of player, maybe he's the kind of guy that could give you some good minutes here. But I would wonder if he's that much better an option than Adam McQuaid as far as the puck-moving end and the offensive end.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, you look at – I could see it easily happening. I don't think it would be the answer at all. But Carl Gunnarsson's a UFA next year. He's only making 2.9. They saw a lot of him, obviously, when he played for the Leafs, so they're familiar with his game. Or you could look.
Carl Gunnarsson still icing some of the bruises he took in Game 7 from Milan Lucic when he kept blowing him up in the corner.
Was he the guy that went through the glass?
No, that was Van Rijn.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's not playing anymore.
No, he's coaching somewhere now. Yeah.
But, or Chris Butler.
Yeah.
They know him well. Who knows? But, you know, there's some names out there. It will be interesting to see what happens. I think they're still trying to say, are we making a groundbreaking trade or a patchwork trade? I think that's where they're at right now. But they have to do something to shore up that D. Because while everybody's played better lately, they're still going to go through stretches that we saw in the first few games.
Well, if you're going to give up a high-profile roster player, if you're the Bruins, like a forward, you're going to have to get an impact defenseman.
You're going to need a Shattenkirk.
There's no doubt you're going to have to get a real top quality player coming back in return. And you know, I don't think I want them to go out and, you know, sell the farm for a veteran guy that's on the last year of a deal or rental.
No.
I'd rather them, you know, try to find somebody that's a little younger if they can, and they're not able to develop one of those guys. But maybe they do go in that direction, because I know, you know, they like Brandon Carlo a lot, the guy they drafted out of Tri-City, the big kid, 6'5".
Yep.
They like Robbie O'Gara, the kid that's playing at Yale that they drafted as well, two really big defensemen that they think are going to be NHL ready in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So do you trade for a player that you know is only going to be here for a year or two because you have these other players coming in that you feel like are the
future?
It
all depends where they are in the standings. That's going to be it, you know? I mean, if they're out of it, they're going to go for a guy that they can build with, you know, and that can be part of that rebuilding or part of growing with the other young defensemen they have. It'll be interesting, Joe. One thing, though.
What about Dustin Byfuglien?
Wouldn't go near him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go near him.
Because
there's just too much luggage. He would. I think Claude Julien would literally have a heart attack on the bench with him playing on their blue line. But I wouldn't go near him. He's a UFA. Yeah, he'd be the guy, I guess, the veteran guy that's going into a UFA year with the star power that you could bring in.
Right.
But obviously, it's gonna shut up the fans and the media here. But
given what the Bruins got for Lucic as a UFA, though, and the haul that they got back in return, a team like Winnipeg is going to be looking for an awful lot for him.
Oh,
you're talking, you know, a couple of first-round picks, a roster player of some kind, you know, the Martin Jones-level roster player. Mm. And a prospect as well, a kid like Colin Miller. So it would be a high price for a guy like that. I don't know, though. I mean, he would address a lot of what they need, and I love the versatility of him being a big, huge power forward and a potential defenseman. And, like, power play-wise, he'd be dynamite as well. But, you know, I feel like there's a little less need for a big power play guy. I thought there was going to be a huge hole left when Dougie went to Calgary on the point on the power play. And David Krejci and Tory Krug have filled in tremendously well as far as that goes. This is as good a power play as I can ever remember seeing since the Savard days.
David Krejci was the last pick in my fantasy hockey league. Wow. God bless the guy who got him.
Yeah. And you know, obviously he's going to cool off. And he's got a little streaky element to him.
He stays healthy.
Being on that power play, if that power play cranks like that all year, his offensive numbers are going to go up. All the Bruins' offensive numbers will go up if they have an extremely healthy, bountiful power play like that all year.
Yeah, exactly. One guy I don't think is going anywhere, and even though people were trying to ship him out of town already, is Tuukka Rask, Joe. Yeah. And I just, It was quite comical to hear some of the local radio stations giving up so quickly on Tuca here. I mean, come on. I don't know. I mean, was he good? No, he was making mistakes. He was letting in softies, but he's far from the issue here.
Yeah.
And I know you want a guy to come in and steal a lot of games when you have a weak defense. And you know what? He'll get to that point. He will have some of those 60-save efforts where he steals a game for the Bruins or gets them a much-needed point in an overtime loss or some, or a shootout loss. But come on. Let's slow down here a bit. It was really... I don't know.
The goalie is always going to take the bullets for a horrible defense like that, though, Murph. And Tuca gets it, too. He understands. And I give him credit where he's just, you know, not going to say, look, you know, I am absolutely horrible, because he knows he wasn't absolutely horrible. He wasn't great. He was average. But the defense in front of him was abominable, terrible. And it was a big part of the reason. Like, if anything, he should be pissed, because you look at his numbers and, you know, he's like a Halloween goaltending horror show with those stats when you look at it right now. And it's going to take months before he's going to look anywhere close to normal because of all those goals.
Not everybody can be Frederick Anderson.
No, this is true.
That poor guy, huh? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that poor team. That poor coach, Bruce Boudreau. Well, I feel so bad for him.
Have you seen Anderson's stats? He's got Vezina Trophy stats right now, and he doesn't have a win.
What is it about Bruce Boudreau? Had world-class offensive talent in Washington with the Caps. They had a horrible power play. They had trouble scoring goals. He's got all that talent in Anaheim, same thing, and they've got 9 goals in 9 games. How do you do that?
I don't know what is going on with that.
It's unbelievable.
The guy, so I don't want to knock him too
much. No, I'd like him too, but...
But something's off.
No, that place screams out like he may not be long for there, just given how bad
By the time
are.
This is posted online, that could be the case.
Right, and as far as you were talking about with Tuukka Rask and bringing him up, I'll go back to what I wrote in my notes column this week. Tuukka Rask has a young family. He just bought a house outside of Boston. He's got a no-movement clause, and he's got a long-term deal with a lot of money. That is the poster child for guys that will never, ever waive their no-movement clause and are not going
anywhere.
Maybe
6 years from now.
Yeah, maybe towards the end. But it would take years of the Bruins absolutely sucking and giving up a ton of goals in front of him and having terrible defense before Tuukka Rask would be willing to move on from Boston. He likes it here. Yeah. You know, he's not going to agree to go anywhere. And even if it was the right move, and I don't think it is, I think you have to have a goalie like that. And I'm not a big believer in Malcolm Subban, and Zane MacIntyre has yet to show me anything. Ugh. No. So, you know, I'm not one of those people that says, oh, you pull the plug on him, you save some cap money, and you get a young kid in here for $3 or $4 million. But in the real world, in the real situation with Tuukka Rask, when you look at him in his situation, and, you know, this is where what we do and the personal element, knowing stuff about them beyond just the X's and O's on the ice, he's not going anywhere. He doesn't want to go anywhere. It's not going to happen. You know, it's fantasy land to even think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just interesting the way – it's like we say, people don't factor in no trade clauses or, you know, what's going on in the players. You got to think about all these things before you start throwing these things out there. And I'm not blaming fans. There's media that does it too.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of factors that go into trades, and there's too many working against a possible Tuukka Rask trade.
No doubt, Murph, but there will be a defenseman trade at some point this year.
I agree.
And you heard some of the names here. And I think one of those could very easily be in black and gold in a Bruins uniform before the season is up, before the trade deadline is out. But moving on, we're going to go to the next segment. We call this Three Periods, and today it's Three Periods with Ryan Spooner, and we talk about his off-season yoga routine, his the movies that he's seen lately.
I've been thinking about yoga, Joe.
I think you should do a little downward dog,
Murph.
All
right, let's do it.
And the music that he listens to prior to game time, which includes Taylor Swift, who I know you're a huge fan of Taylor
huge,
Swift.
Oh, huge, huge, yeah.
All right, here's Three Periods with Ryan Spooner.
Here are Three Periods with Ryan Spooner. Spoons, I know... talking to you a little bit, that you yoga is something that you've sort of gotten into as an off-season training program. What exactly do you do with it, and how did that whole thing start?
My flexibility was pretty awful, I think, in my second or third year camp. I think I was the worst, so I went home this summer.
As far as what, like testing and all that stuff?
Yeah, like we did like the sit and reach test and like the stuff for our hips, and mine was just brutal. So I went home in the summertime, and I contacted a girl back home, and I asked her if I could attend some of her classes, and she said that I could. So I went there, and a couple summers ago, I was going like 2 or 3 times a week, and I found that it just helped out. And I just found going to the gym like 4 or 5 times a week, I was just getting tight, you know, my hips and my hamstrings and all that kind of stuff. So in the past summer, I cut that down to like three or four times a week, and then, you know, I was trying to stretch a lot more and all that kind of stuff. So I definitely noticed a huge, I guess, kind of difference with that.
It was a downward dog, warrior's pose. Do you have a favorite? Does the woman call him out while you're doing all the stretches, or how does that work?
I kind of prefer the one at the end where you just get to nap for the 5 or 10 minutes. But two summers ago, I just went to her house. Just I guess me and a couple buddies used to go there, and the classroom she has now is pretty hot, actually, so it's a little bit more of a challenge. But she has some more advanced classes, which I'm not really into. I just find them a little bit too hard, so I kind of prefer, I think it's called Yin, where it's a little bit more slower moving. You have to hold some of the positions for a little bit longer, so I tend to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the hot yoga is pretty intense. I did that a few years ago with the wife. I didn't like it so much. Outside of the rink and outside of practicing, whatever, what's your favorite thing to do downtime-wise?
I like to play Xbox.
Favorite games?
I like to play Call of Duty. I like to play, like, the role-playing games, so, like, Fallout 4 is coming out soon. I like to play Halo. You know, I like to play a bunch of different games.
Do you get on, like, the Xbox Live and play with your buddies and, like, talk smack to them and all that stuff?
Yeah, I have a buddy. He's from Toronto. I used to go to high school with him and stuff like that, and he's on there all the time. So I get to play with him, and I get to talk to him. It's basically like we're on the phone, so we get to catch up and all that kind of stuff. And we'll be playing for 4 or 5 hours at a time sometimes, and we get some other friends online too. So it's good just to use that to, I guess, kind of catch up, and it's fun too at the same time. And then, I guess, kind of besides that, I like going to see the odd movie. Sometimes I'll just go alone, you know, if I feel like going alone, and I guess doing that, or I go with some guys on the team. So,
any good ones you'd recommend to anybody?
I saw Martian. It was good. It was a little slow, but the concept of it was actually pretty cool. You know, just the whole thing about him being on Mars and how he was the first, I guess, person to be there, I guess you could say, alone. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool to see, and how he kind of used his skills to stay alive. It was kind of cool.
Music-wise, what do you listen to? Do you listen to music to get ready to play, and what sort of gets you excited to play?
It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. I mean, on my iPod, I have Taylor Swift all the way down to, like, Great Big Sea. I have some Celtic music on there. I got
Stuff.
I got some screamo music. I got house music. I got rap music. It all kind of just depends. I usually have, like, a blend of it all. It kind of just depends on what kind of mood I'm in. I'm not the kind of guy that just listens to, like, you know, just like, I only like rap,
right?
Or I like to listen to rock. I listen to all of it. So again, it just kind of depends on how I'm feeling that day.
Does Taylor Swift really get you jacked up to play? Can that happen?
I wouldn't listen to her before a game. She'd be more like if I was just at home and I guess kind of just hanging out, then I would just kind of put her on. So
all right, good stuff with Ryan Spooner, Murph. I know a lot more about yoga than I used to, which I'm not sure is a good or a bad thing. I know you can't wait to get in that 95-degree room and let the yoga poses
go. Me, the guy who has the AC on in January. Yep, I'm looking forward to it.
But coming up next, we actually have a short interview with 18-year-old Brandon McCarthy from Stoneham. He was part of the Hockey Fights Cancer Night at the Garden with the Bruins last week. The Bruins were wearing purple jerseys that were going to be raffled off during the pregame warm-up, and there were a lot of guests, kids fighting cancer heroically and courageously that were celebrated and honored during the game. Brandon McCarthy was one of those kids from Stoneham, so I sat down with him for a couple of minutes and just talked about his experience, and you know, what a special kid. Joe Haggerty, Bruins Insider, here with Brandon McCarthy, a fellow Stoneham native, just like Joe Haggerty here for Hockey Nights Fights Cancer Night, the Boston Bruins. And Brandon, this is a really important night for you and an important cause. Why don't you tell us a little bit why?
In my freshman summer going into my sophomore year of high school, I was diagnosed with leukemia, ALL, the T-cell type. And It was very hard for me. It took away from what I like to do, is play hockey. But I battled through it, and I'm in remission now. I've been in remission for about a year now, and I'm going to Wentworth. I graduated from Stoneham High last year, and I'm looking forward to, the future and what it brings to me.
Absolutely. And when you were going through the treatments, when you were having, tough times at Stoneham High, and who did you go to for inspiration, or where did you go to for inspiration? What sort of helped you out, and maybe if you're feeling down a little bit, kind of brought you up? Was it family? Was it hockey? Was it, friends in school? Like, what kinds of things really helped you from all those times?
In the beginning, it was mostly family. I couldn't skate because the treatment was hard on my my joints and my legs and everything. But after the first year of treatment, I actually got back on skates, and it felt awesome. And then I started going back to hockey and playing with the high school team. And then that was kind of my escape from everything.
Yeah, it must have felt great when you got back on the ice and were able to do that. Like, where's the love of hockey come from? Does it come from your dad, or just yourself growing up watching the Bruins? Where does this passion for hockey come from?
It definitely comes from my dad. Growing up, he put me on skates at 3 years old, 2 years old actually, and I didn't want anything with skates at two, so I just ran around the backyard rink on my boots, and then at three I started skating. So it was definitely my dad.
And you were going through youth hockey, all that stuff in Stoneham, all the way
hockey,
through?
Youth hockey all the way through. I took a year off from youth hockey and played Middlesex Braves, which is a select league.
Yep.
And it kind of boosts my level of play up.
Well, how meaningful is it to have a Hockey Fights Cancer like a night like tonight, organized by the NHL, organized by the Bruins, to be a part of that and just to see the effort that they put to get the message out there to raise money, awareness, and everything else? How much does that mean to you?
Being a cancer survivor and having it impact me, it's great. I feel that it makes the NHL, and it shows how big of sweethearts hockey players actually are.
It's true.
But it's great. I think it shows awareness, and it gives a sense of love to a community like Boston.
How vividly do you remember the day when you got the word that you were in remission and that, things looked good for you? Do you remember, is there a story that comes along with that day or something that you remember from that whole experience?
So, yeah, I remember it vividly. It was like within the first month I went into remission, and then I stayed through remission throughout the rest of the treatment. So that was good, but it was always just every checkup I was like, okay, am I gonna bounce out of remission or am I gonna stay in it? But thankfully I stayed in remission throughout my whole treatment after a month.
That's great news. How did that change your view on things? So, like, did your point of view and perspective on life and all that stuff change as a result of going through this? I can't imagine that it would stay the same after you experience something like this as a kid in high school that, normally doesn't go through something like that.
It definitely changed. It brought me closer to my family, I think, and it also made me look at the world a different way and be like, okay, maybe you shouldn't do that or stuff, different things. It just, I don't know.
Like high school kid stuff, you mean?
Yeah, school kid stuff. But yeah, it definitely changed my perspective on how I think about the world and what I do every day and what I put in my body and everything like that.
What are you going to Wentworth for, and what do you want to do, when you grow into a career and go into the real world someday?
I'm going to Wentworth for architecture, and I'm in a 5-year program right now, so I get my bachelor's in 4 and then my master's in 1 year, and then I pretty much go out into the world. But then once I get my foot in the door, I would like to own my own firm sometime in my future in Boston.
Be your own boss. There's nothing wrong with that.
Be my own boss. Yeah, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the Relay for Life and the American Cancer Society and your involvement with that group.
So I first went to my first Relay for Life actually a couple months before I was diagnosed. So at the end of my freshman year of high school. And I was just there because my coach had a team, and he invited some of us down to see what it is, and I thought it was pretty cool. I never thought that I would like be one of those people that are celebrated, let alone 4 months later. But then the next couple of years, I started my team that next year. I did Relay. I feel like it brings the community closer. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how many people are actually affected by this, and how many family members and how many friends are affected.
I think it's touched everybody's lives, unfortunately. I imagine it's something, too, that you're always going to be involved with going forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Relay for Life and all that stuff. Let's get to the hockey end of things a little bit with the Bruins here. If you're a huge hockey fan, who's your favorite player?
Marchand, definitely Brad Marchand.
Really? No, why do you say that?
I don't know. I just like how he plays. I like how he gets under people's skin, and he's small. He's small like me, and he likes to go into the corners. He's not afraid.
Not a bad role model at all. Yeah. Your favorite sort of Bruins moment growing up watching the team? Do you have something? Obviously, I probably know the answer to this, but what's your favorite memory?
There's two. Definitely the Winter Classic was one of them, and then them winning the Stanley Cup, of course.
Did you get tickets to Foxborough January 1st yet?
I do not. I do not.
We're going to see if there's any connections out there to get Brandon some tickets.
All right.
Have a good night, my friend. It was nice meeting you.
Enjoy. Nice meeting you.
And it's awesome news to know that you're in remission.
All right,
and SHS, the biggest, the best. Don't ever forget that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, take care.
All right, Murph, good show this week. Chock full of stuff. Some hockey trade talk with defensemen. Shoot the breeze a little bit about the Bruins. I think this was pretty much running the gamut from beginning to end.
Great show, Joe, and looking forward to the next one.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks, Jimmy Murphy. Thank you, Brandon McCarthy. And tune in a couple weeks. We'll be back. But for now, keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey. See you, folks.
Want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed? Head over to csnne.com/podcast.